So it's interesting that, you know, this comes from the family protecting me. Nobody'd ever mentioned cancer anywhere. Mum had to go into hospital. That's all it was. You went into hospital for all sorts of things. Nobody mentioned cancer. And at that time, cancer was still seen as almost a dirty disease that almost it was like the wrath of God was being visited on you because you've done something wrong and he's given you cancer because. And it wasn't until a few years later when Richard Dimbleby, father of the Dimbleby brothers, stood up on television and said, "I have cancer." And he started to open up about what cancer was and the treatments and the advances they had made and the struggles they were still making. But prior to that, cancer was not something you voluntarily told everybody about because it still got this slightly dodgy background with it. And yeah, I mean, well done to Mr. Dimbleby for standing up and bringing it out into the open an awful lot of people were struggling with it in silence. I mean, looking back, I've often thought he was probably me, but frustrated earlier on. I think he was quite a bright lad, and I think he'd won a place to Manchester Grammar School, but they couldn't afford for him to go. And then he wanted to join the forces in the war, but they wouldn't let him. The forces wouldn't have him because he was in a better place doing things. So I think there's a lot of frustration in there in his life. I don't remember him ever doing sport, but he loved his garden and got into his garden in a big way, which was sad really because the ground in Horwich is absolutely appalling. It's boulder clay, and you dig it and you dig it and you dig it, but it's so unforgiving. And you read all these gardening books where they talk about soil and proper stuff. But Dad, bless him, was struggling with this boulder clay and putting peat. It would have, certainly would have been peat in those days, wouldn't it? To grow his roses in. So yeah, he worked away in his garden. Did Dad have time with us? Certainly in the early days, no. I can remember Christmas mornings. We didn't open presents until Dad came back from work because they would work Christmas morning. That was part of the, yeah. In fact, it was very, it's not a question of you will work Christmas morning. It was more a question of we're being very generous and letting you have Christmas afternoon off. It was that way round, you know. So yeah, your Christmas presents didn't get opened until after lunch on Christmas Day. In later life, Mum tells me that I've asked her as a toddler, "Who's that strange man who keeps appearing?" And that was Dad coming home because I saw him so infrequently. And I think that's when he stopped working as many shifts as he could, because I think new house, they'd moved there. I think he'd been working every hour that they'd let him, so that he could hold things together. And I think from that stage, then he was less likely to work as often and as long as he did. It was very much woman's places in the home and bringing up the two kids. And because she's moved away from Manchester and moved away from the family, you've not got any support network. Things that as an adult now, you're very conscious of the support networks. So I think the women on the estate provided one another with a support network, but not to the extent that any of them were going out to work in that sense. So it wasn't until probably when certainly Janet was in school, my sister Janet was in school, that she got a job then working in the school meals, which sort of works as well, because you get the school holidays off and you're back home late afternoon, so the kids are not left by themselves for long. And then she worked on from there. So I guess that must have made a huge difference to them when suddenly there's a second wage coming into the household. I don't know what she used to do. I don't know where they met. I know when Dad was at De Had's, as a tool setter, he would have a number of machines that he would keep running, and he would set them up, and he'd be producing screws, he'd be producing bolts, he'd be producing nuts, whatever. And then I think originally you would have had somebody who was a bar feeder. So once he'd set the machine up, he would have somebody whose job it was to feed bars in, which would then be cut and sliced and whatever, and diced and turned into nuts and bolts and all the rest of it, until they'd run off however many thousand they wanted, and then he'd come and set it up for something else. And I know in early days at De Havs, it would have been women who were bar feeders. So I don't know whether Mum worked at Metro's as a bar feeder and he'd come across her there, or I don't know. So I never had any understanding as to what she'd done before. So yeah, Mum certainly kept her eyes open as to where things were going and what we wanted. Knowing Nana Taylor, I can't imagine she had been as assiduous in making sure that there was always money to pay the rent. So whether these feelings about Ellis Lowry were because, you know, there'd been stern words that if you don't pay this week, then, you know, it's time you were on your way. I don't know. But that was one of her landmarks, one of her goals each week. The rent's paid. Mr. Stubbs has signed it off. And
again, that's prioritising
yep.